From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Starting Monday, every Illinoisan 16 and over, no matter where they live or where they work, will be eligible to access these life-saving COVID-19 vaccines. Weeks ago, we set our sights on April 12th as the date for every county receiving vaccine from the state to open to full eligibility. And I am so proud that all 101 counties plus suburban Cook County have met that timeline. Our fight to stay safe and protect ourselves isn't over. But with each day and each dose, we move closer and closer to putting this pandemic to an end.
Step by step, we are making it to the finish line. First, the amount of vaccine is increasing. Second, the number of vaccine providers is also increasing. And thirdly, the number of people eligible to be vaccinated is increasing.
Well, that's the Illinois Public Health Director Ngozi Ezike and Governor J.B. Pritzker. Things are looking up when it comes to the vaccine rollout. More people are getting shots, but on Monday, those 16 and over will be eligible to get the shots. So that's good news, but why are some worried we could be heading into another surge? We'll talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, we have Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House Editor. And joining us today, Peter Hancock, who reports for Capital News Illinois. And Peter, it's always good to have you back with us.
Yeah, it's nice to be here, Sean.
Well, Hannah, the goal, I guess, from the beginning, or at least from months ago, has been to get more shots in people's arms. As I mentioned, that is happening. But the news isn't all good. Cases, hospitalizations, they've been on the rise. So where do we stand right now in the state of Illinois when it comes to the pandemic?
That's right. I mean, we're getting there in terms of more shots in arms, and hopefully beginning Monday when every single person in the state 16 and over is eligible for a vaccination. We will see those numbers increase even more quickly. Currently, we are at 20% of the state's total population vaccinated. Experts say that herd immunity takes between 70 and 90%, but of course, right now, children under 16 are not at all eligible to get vaccinated. Despite, you know, a promising new study from Pfizer saying that they would like to move ahead with approving vaccines for kids between 12 and 16. But, you know, as we've talked about for the last couple of weeks on this show, we are being prevented from expanding capacity because of these increases in new hospitalizations. In the last month, we have seen new hospitalizations for COVID go up 92%. And we've seen the average number of new cases of COVID reported daily go up about 100%. And that's not obviously the right direction. We have to win the war against the variants. We have to win the war, you know, by getting more people vaccinated. But we're in a very precarious spot right now because, you know, as we've talked about a lot of times, social pressures, and you know, we've been locked inside, you know, more or less for a year, and for a lot of people, when they see their friends and family go out, they want to go out too. And you know, I think that there's some false sense of security there, you know, especially for folks who aren't vaccinated. And we've seen the increases in cases actually be for, you know, a lot of millennials, young folks who have not really, unless their job description was one of those who let them, you know, get a vaccine earlier, they by and large have not been able to be vaccinated. So, you know, to avoid this, you know, a real big scary surge, people have to kind of rein it in. But that's, it's one thing to say that, but it's quite another to actually have that done.
Well, there's people who have not been eligible, and then there's people just denying or not wanting to take the vaccine. And Charlie, I heard Dr. Ezike say this week, the number of people hospitalized with COVID-19 who have had the vaccine is really small amount, like well under 1%. This goes back to like January numbers. That's a signal that the vaccine works to stop people from getting this disease. And a problem is apparently still a lot of people are refusing to take it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's in some very limited cases, there are reasons, medical reasons, why it wouldn't be prudent to vaccinate someone. There may be some people who have religious objections, but this notion that I don't want to do it because this is something the government tells me to do, and I'm a free person, and I have my rights and my liberties, in my mind, that is just a load of horse manure. The government tells you a lot of things that you have to do. Wear seatbelts, for example. Anybody who wants to go to school in the state of Illinois has to be vaccinated for certain communicable diseases, and there's not any big outrage about that. And the notion that somehow there's something fishy about these vaccines or that they don't work, that's nonsense. The reports are just very, very solidly, the evidence is there. The studies have shown that vaccinated people will not, they may possibly get a mild case, something like maybe, I don't know what the percentages are, but it's you're more likely to get hit by a bus walking in your neighborhood. But nobody who's been vaccinated, as far as I know, or I shouldn't say nobody, I think out of the millions of people who've been vaccinated, there are maybe a couple hundred who passed away from COVID. And even then, they're not sure that all of those are directly blamable on the virus, because some of the people had underlying conditions. So I would say that someone who has this notion that I don't want to do it because the government tells me to is being totally selfish. You don't necessarily have to do it for yourself, but do it for the people you're going to come in contact with, the people in your family, the older people, the people that you would meet out in public, going to the store, going to church, those kinds of things. In my mind, it's the responsible thing to do to get vaccinated.
Yeah, Peter, the beginning of this vaccine rollout, there were some stumbles, not just here in Illinois, but in other places. But it appears as though the state is setting records almost on a daily basis for how many people are getting vaccinated. So there's a lot of people who do want it and are following through to get the shot. And it looks like supply is now meeting the demand.
It's getting close. You know, as you played in the opening, starting Monday the 12th, everybody 16 and over is going to be eligible. They won't all get it the first week. It's still going to, you know, there is a logistical challenge to vaccinating 12 and a half million people in the state. But yeah, there were some initial hiccups, but it does appear to be going pretty well. I think one of the important things about this surge is, you know, Hannah was saying, you know, 20% of the adult population has been vaccinated. But for people 65 and over, I think we're up getting close to 75% in that group. And so the new cases you're seeing now aren't hitting the elderly as much, because most of them have been vaccinated. We're seeing a lot more younger people getting it. And so, you know, in the initial wave of the pandemic, that was why there were so many deaths, was people over a certain age and people with underlying health conditions were the most vulnerable to it. Well, those are now the first people getting vaccinated. And so you're seeing the outbreaks in a much younger group. And so possibly the death rate won't be as high, but there's still a lot of circulation in the community. And that is something to be concerned about.
Right now, the biggest, the highest positivity rates that we're seeing in the state, you know, 10, 11, 12% are all around the Peoria area, in Peoria County, Tazewell County, Stark County. And Peter is correct. You know, it's definitely shifted to be the young people who are getting infected. And of course, you're correct also that, you know, the death rate, we have not seen a climb, thank goodness, but that doesn't mean that COVID is, you know, if you get infected, that you're just going to recover, because you don't know what could happen. Lots of things could happen. You could have long haul COVID. You could lose your sense of taste. You could, you know, develop blood clots. There's a lot of things that we don't know. And I also, there's a new study that says 1 in 3 people who have been diagnosed with COVID actually go on to develop some sort of psychosis. It could be very mild, but we've also seen pretty extreme cases that have unfortunately led to suicide and other neurological conditions that could include, you know, losing your sense of smell and taste for a while. But, you know, in terms of, I just want to make a quick clarification, over 70% of those 65 and over have been vaccinated. People 16 and over been vaccinated. It's over 40% now, but 20% of the total population. And like I said earlier, children are still not able to get a vaccine, but they still are part of our population. And there are studies that say that, yes, they do transmit COVID, probably not as much, but they're still a part of the equation.
Then when you're vaccinated, it's unclear whether or not you can harbor the virus within yourself and transmit it to someone else. For example, in my case, I've had my two vaccine shots, and it's been more than 2 weeks since the second one. And so in theory, I'm pretty much immune. But on the other hand, what is unclear is whether or not, should I come into contact with an infected person, can I harbor the virus myself and then pass it on to someone else? So in my case, I'm going to keep wearing a face mask for who knows how long.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and also today we have Peter Hancock from Capital News, Illinois. Peter, the governor had called for a bridge phase to reopening, and the state pushed that off because of some of these rising metrics that we talked about regarding hospitalizations, cases, and things going up. That's one of the reasons I hear a lot of people saying they want to get the shot. They want to get back to normal as quick as possible. Do we have any idea? Have we gotten any additional information from the administration about when we might move reopening a little bit more for the state?
Well, the conditions are that you have to have, you know, more than 70% of people age 65 and over vaccinated. We've hit that mark. To get to full reopening, phase 5, we need to have at least 50% of the total adult population vaccinated. We're still a little bit short of that. But the other thing is that you have to have stable or declining hospitalization rates for 28 days, which is 2 quarantine cycles. And that's where we're missing the mark. If we can get the new cases and the hospitalization rates down, then we might be able to move into that bridge phase. But right now, you know, we've got regions of the state that are in danger of moving back into tier 1 mitigations.
Well, earlier this week, Hannah, a small rural county in eastern Illinois made some national news over a COVID outbreak there, Douglas County. Fill us in on what that was about.
That is correct. A CDC investigation revealed that, I believe it was in February, there was this super spreader event at a bar in Douglas County, and that's near Tuscola, south of Champaign. And what had happened was they traced it back to a person who got a positive COVID test result, but went to a bar anyway because this person was asymptomatic, and ended up infecting a bunch of people, including people who worked at a long-term care facility. And you know, it turned out that the folks who got sick at the long-term care facility, staff and residents, they had elected to not get vaccinated when they were given the chance, you know, earlier this year when the vaccination program was rolling out at those nursing homes. So it's really a, you know, kind of embarrassing thing for the state, embarrassing lesson, but definitely a lesson in when you test positive, your personal choice to not stay home, that doesn't just affect you. It affects a lot of other people. And, you know, doctors are still not sure what makes someone a so-called super spreader, but you don't know if you are one or not, or if your body has the capability of, spreading those viral particles to a lot of people. But definitely an object lesson in personal responsibility and how that affects public health.
In that bar in Villa Grove, Andrew Sullender, who's a reporter for the Sun-Times, is from Douglas County. And he did a very interesting story where he went and talked to the owner of the bar. The bar is called the Embra because it's very close to the Embra River, which is a river over there in East Central and down into Southern Illinois. And the owner said to him that they had a grand opening for the bar. And he said that there were 30, 40 people attended the grand opening. Most of them were just close friends or acquaintances. And he said, you can't make them wear masks. You can't throw customers out for not wearing a mask. But the CDC said, as a result, 46 residents wound up contracting COVID-19. The school system had to close. There were a number of secondary infections. So this really was a super spreader event. And it goes to show how just a little bit of, what would one say, in my case, it would be a little bit of recklessness, can lead to really serious consequences. Fortunately, there did not appear to be any deaths related to this event.
COVID-19 has hit state government hard, it's hit a lot of agencies hard. And Peter, you covered a budget hearing this week involving one of those agencies on the front lines of this fight, the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. What did you learn from them?
That was a very interesting hearing. They spent a lot of time talking about what the agency has been through for the past year when the pandemic first hit and all the different kinds of things they had to adapt to. But for this upcoming year, overall, they're looking at a funding cut, and that's largely because they're expecting not quite as much federal money. The Emergency Management Agency is largely funded. It's kind of a pass-through agency for federal disaster relief and homeland security preparedness. They are asking for an increase in general revenues, state general revenues, to fund about 13 more positions. But one of the interesting things they said was that in order to get ready for the next statewide disaster, whenever, whatever that may be, we really need to take a look at beefing up the local county level emergency management agencies, especially in the smaller rural counties, where you might just have one person, maybe even a part-time person, in charge of their emergency management. They said that if they really should have in every county the ability to have up to 25 people to respond to an emergency. And we just didn't have that in the early days of the pandemic. And as a result, the state emergency management agency took on a huge role in managing the state's overall response.
Well, some money is coming into schools in Illinois, quite a bit actually, from the federal stimulus dollars. Hannah, the governor has also weighed in on how he thinks schools should put that money to use. Can you fill us in on that?
Sure. Illinois schools are getting, their cut of $7 billion that will for the next 3.5 years, they can spend this money. And this T20 council, which is, a council made up of business leaders, educators, parents, and some lawmakers, they have come out with this resource guide that is recommending to schools, although, they ultimately have the freedom of deciding where to spend that money, but recommending that they spend it in these high impact areas to kind of stem the tide of learning loss. And it's, it's not just learning loss in the way that, that it's been talked about, like, oh, my child can't catch up. Well, listen, most kids are behind in the same kind of ways. But what this report recommends is so-called high impact tutoring, social emotional learning assessments that kind of target students' needs, making sure that, okay, you might be okay in this area, but it's really, you know, your math skills that really need help here. And, you know, trying to encourage kids to get into early education programs and help high school kids move on to, you know, college if that is their goal. But during the pandemic, it's not just that we've lost, you know, this learning, but it's also we've lost track of a lot of students. You know, students who, especially in areas where, you know, maybe their parental and parents couldn't be involved as much, areas in which, you know, internet access is hard to come by. It's been very difficult to keep track of some of these, you know, students, and that ultimately affects their whole future. You know, there's a lot of evidence out there that says when you have an adult, even if it's not your parent, even if it's just, you know, even if it's a teacher or a school counselor, when they invest in students who they see are struggling, that can really turn around, you know, a kid's trajectory. And so when you can't reach those students in the middle of a pandemic, it's really worrisome for a lot of educators to see, you know, they worry about those kids that they might have seen last March for the last time.
Well, Hannah, before time gets away from us, real quick, after the show last week, Governor took his pen and signed a couple of bills that we had actually discussed briefly on the show, and those were pieces of legislation that the mayor of Chicago was not a fan of. And can you fill us in again real quick on what those what that legislation was all about and what kind of lingering effects this might have on that relationship?
Sure. One of those pieces of legislation would affect the Chicago Firefighters Pension Fund. It would allow all retired Chicago firefighters to get their 3% annual cost of living increase, whether or not they were born before or after this cutoff date of 1966. Mayor Lightfoot had lobbied against that piece of legislation, but, you know, after the fact, it's really hard to do. And so, you know, she's upset that this will grow Chicago's deficit, but, you know, it was supported by a majority and, you know, the governor was put in a hard place. And so the other piece of legislation was a law that restores the ability of Chicago's teachers union to go on strike over matters beyond wages and benefits. You know, this was something that changed in 1995 in this big law that not only, you know, changed this, but also changed from the Chicago School Board to an elected entity to an entity that could be, that its members could be appointed by Chicago's mayor, which at the time was Mayor Richard M. Daley. Now, a third piece of legislation that Mayor Lightfoot does not like, but is definitely, you know, has gained steam in Springfield, the Chicago, the Cook County Democratic Party this week endorsed the piece of legislation, would allow for an elected school board. It is, you know, Mayor Lightfoot says that she still supports the concept, but she does not like this particular piece of legislation, but it looks on track to, you know, go forward in Springfield. So that'd be three losses and just another strike in the relationship between the governor and Mayor Lightfoot. But, you know, historically, it's not like those relationships have, you know, had to be hand in hand, you know, all smiles and roses. There's been a lot of fights there before, no matter who has held those offices. But just think it's really interesting, this growing divide between the two of them.
And Charlie, you've said that you're not so sure that it's that much of a divide because they agree on a lot of other things.
Yeah, and I'm thinking as a practical matter, there are so many issues that are, what would you say, more important in the grand scheme of things than to have disagreements on maybe half a dozen things. That's to be expected. They're both individuals with very strong beliefs, very forceful personalities, and so you are going to have these difficulties. But in the end, I think on most issues, the mayor and the governor are going to work together for doing what they think is best for the citizens of Illinois. And it's certainly not the kind of a situation where say Lori Lightfoot is going to endorse a challenger to J.B. Pritzker in the Democratic primary, is going to endorse whoever the Republicans dredge up as their candidate. No, these are like, what would you say, the family disputes. And the folks like us who follow politics closely and are just fascinated by all this, we think this is a big deal. My guess is the average person on the street could care less.
Yeah, Peter, you agree with that? Just about 30 seconds left.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that generally speaking, in the world of pension funds, if you're 90% funded, 80 to 90% funded, you're in pretty good shape. 70% funded, people start to get worried. If you go below 60% funded, that's when Moody's starts calling you on the phone. These pension funds in Chicago are less than 20% funded. And so the idea of passing a bill that actually increases the amount of money they're going to have to pay out in the future is very worrisome.
All right. Let's go to our notes from the field. Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, the numbers are out for the recreational marijuana sales in March, and it broke a record, as has been the case frequently in the past. We sold $109 million of recreational marijuana in March, which was 35% higher than in February. $33 million went to people out of state, and that covered roughly 2.3 million individual marijuana items. And one of the people in the industry suggested at this rate, we could bring in more than $400 million in tax revenue this year through marijuana sales, which could likely double from last year to roughly $1.3 billion. That's a whole lot of weed for a whole lot of stoners.
All right, Hannah.
Well, Republican gubernatorial hopeful Gary Rabin, who is a pavement magnate, we could call him, he kicked in more than $250,000 to his own Republican campaign for governor, and that lifts the caps off of, you know, every single gubernatorial candidate who would get into the race. You know, a few weeks ago we talked about how the governor himself put $35 million into his campaign, but it was just a few days before the date, which, you know, in 2022 would be the primary, and so it didn't actually lift the caps.
All right, and Peter.
The General Assembly is coming back into the State House for in-person sessions next week. I think at this point, most legislators and a fair number of people in the press corps have had both their vaccination shots, but there are still going to be mitigation measures in place. Masks will still be required, saliva tests twice a week. But I think it's a sign that things are start, at least in that building, things are going to start to get back to something resembling normal.
All right, that's all the time we have for this edition of State Week, and our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Peter Hancock. He's with Capital News Illinois. You can get a podcast of our show. It's available at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And don't forget to join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.